From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Cheree. A sweep is as lucky can be. Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Cheroo. Good luck, we're a buff when I shake hands with you. Or blow me a kiss. And that's lucky too.
The music of a generation of Disney movie musicals from the 1960s seems so iconic, we imagine it must have been written by elves or brilliant chimney sweeps. It wasn't. It was written, almost all of it, by two brilliant brothers, Richard and Robert Sherman. Mary Poppins, Winnie the Pooh, The Jungle Book, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Aristocrats, on and on. It is an incredible songbook. Richard Sherman is with us. This hour on Point, we go into the mind of a man whose songs we can't get out of our heads, Richard Sherman. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did you think these songs were handed down from some kind of Disney Valhalla? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in our studio, keyboard at the ready, is Richard Sherman. With his late brother Robert, he wrote the songs for an era of classic Disney movie musicals. Not to mention It's a Small, Small World and a whole lot more. He's winner of 2 Academy Awards, 2 Grammys, the prestigious National Medal of Arts. He contributed new lyrics for the new stage production of The Jungle Book, now out of Chicago and running at the Huntington Theater here in Boston. Richard Sherman, welcome to On Point. You, sir, are awesome.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really looking forward to having our chat.
I just can't imagine. I mean, as a child, you think these things just float down in Disney's world on the wings of butterflies or something. But there it was, you and your brother turning all these out, and I guess in very close proximity to the demands in mind of Walt Disney himself.
Oh, yes. We were very, very lucky. We actually were Walt Disney's private property for about 7 years. We were under contract to Walt Disney, and he liked our work, I think, pretty much. And we really got along famously with the great man. He was a great inspiration and a wonderful human being.
When I look down through this list of musicals for which you and your brother wrote the music and the lyrics, it's just kind of incredible. Did you have a feeling at the time that you were in the midst of something that people might one day look back on as classics?
Oh, I don't think so. I think what Bob and I felt was we were, number one, very, very lucky to be working at a studio like the Disney Studio, which was a mecca for creative ideas. And I think the second thing was that we just wanted to do a good job on each job we were given, on each performance.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And that was basically what it was all about. And never dreamed that here I'd be 50 years later talking about a show that, for example, a movie that we did 50 years ago, and now it's a show. It's amazing.
Where did you and your brother Robert come from? What was your background?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I think we were very lucky. We came from a very musical family. My father was a pop songwriter. His name was Al Sherman. He wrote a lot of great hit popular songs. You know, one of his biggest hits is even today, it's a standard. Everybody knows it. Every football season you hear, you gotta be a football hero to get along with the beautiful girls. That was my father's song.
Wow. He wrote in the 30s, the 40s?
He wrote that in the early 30s, about 33, 34.
So it was a musical family. Where? What town, what part of the country did you
live? New York City. My mom was an actress. She acted on Broadway. She was a protege of David Belasco, the great producer.
Yes.
And she was in several shows on The Big White Way, The Great White Way.
When did you and Robert begin composing your own material?
Well, that's a good story. My brother really never wanted to be a songwriter. He was always interested in writing the great American novel and the great play of all times. And I was very interested in writing the great American musical. I like to write lyrics and music and do that.
Yeah.
And I was right out of college. We both went to Bard College in New York State.
Sure.
We graduated together. And Bob was typing in one room, and I was playing the piano in the other room. And one day our dad walked in and he sat down. He said, "Guys, I want to tell you something." We said, "What?" He said, "I'll bet with all your education, you haven't got the brains to write a little pop song that some kid would give up his lunch money for."
Yeah, yeah. See if you can do that, boys.
It's a challenge. The gauntlet was thrown. So we looked at each other and said, "What do you mean?" He says, "That's all. I just wanted to know if you don't think you could do it." Mm-hmm. And he left. Now, he had a feeling we'd be a great team, but we didn't. And so
for a kid to give up his lunch money is not nothing. Yeah, it's got to have an appeal to it.
So we listened to music on the radio and listened to what was popular. A very country western was very popular then.
Yeah.
That was very much in. And so Bob and I started writing that style just to find out if we could do it. And Dad would listen to things. And then one day we wrote something that he really liked. He'd always criticize usually. And he said, "This one, I think you could sell this one."
And it was?
It was a song called "Gold Can Buy Anything But Love."
Can you give us just a little feel
of it? Oh, sure.
This
song was sung by Gene Autry. "I'm rich and I live in a mansion. I sleep in a soft feather bed. But I know if I die tomorrow, nobody would care if I'm dead."
And off it went. Did you sell it?
We sold it, and unfortunately, it never got to be a big hit. That's an old story. But we got a first big major record there, and we were encouraged to keep writing.
And then you come into the realm of Walt Disney. We have to hear how you got there. Here's a story you wrote for Mouseketeer Annette Funicello, 1959, called "Tall Paul." It reached number 7 on the pop charts, attracted the attention of Walt Disney. I guess who asked you guys to come in? We'll hear the story. Here's "Tall Paul."
Chalk on the sidewalk, writing on the wall. Everybody knows it. I love Paul. Tall Paul, tall Paul, tall Paul. He's my all.
Talk about simple lyrics. "Tall Paul." And there you are with Annette Funicello. And when did you hear from that realm, the Mouseketeers, and when did you hear from Mr. Disney?
There's a wonderful thing called serendipity, lucky accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Bob and I had written this little song, "Tall Paul," and someone at the Disney studio was looking for a piece of material for Annette Funicello,
mm-hmm.
and she was the last of the Mouseketeers, and she's still under contract. And so this song caught their fancy, and it became a big hit, so they asked us, could we write some more songs for Annette? We said, of course we could. Nobody had ever asked us to write songs for her, and she was a big star.
Yeah.
And so we started writing one song after another and had a number of big hits with her. "Pineapple Princess," another one, and "JoJo the Dogface
Okay.
Boy."
Yeah.
And these various songs. And then we started doing albums, and we did an album called Hawaiianette. Was a whole album of Hawaiian music.
For Annette Funicello.
Yeah. And then we did Italianette, and that was a big hit.
Yeah.
And then we did Dancinette, dance music.
Yeah, yeah.
And Annette used to kid us and say, "What's next? Are you going to do bassinette for me? And are you going to do kitchenette when I get my house?"
Yeah.
But actually, Walt Disney was listening to all of her work because he discovered her when she was a little girl, and she was still just about 15 by this time.
Was he not in charge of the Mouseketeers?
Oh, no. Well, Walt was...
Or just overseeing from a distance?
But he selected all the Mouseketeers.
Yes.
She was the last one he selected.
Mm-hmm.
He saw star quality in her, and she was 12 years old when he found her. To make a long story short, Walt liked our songs. And so he asked us to come in and do some songs for Annette, and then we started writing songs for Haley Mills and other
people. "The
Parent
Trap."
"The Parent Trap." And he really liked what we were doing. And one day he handed us a book, and he said, "Read this and tell me what you think." He didn't say, "I need a song for this, I need a title for that, or I need a situation song for this." He just said, "This book, read it and tell me what you think." And the name of the book was "Mary Poppins" by Pamela Travers. And we read this book and we said, "My God, it's just a treasure trove of wonderful stories. And it has a wonderful, wonderful major character. But my God, there's no storyline in this at all. It's just a bunch of chapters." And so we conjured up a chapter. I mean, a story, one story, using
sort of
six.
Condensed and sewn and pitched and patched.
And we came in to Walt with this. We had a major meeting with him. And he got very excited. He liked what we had come up with.
What year are we talking?
Mary 1960.
Poppins came out, 60. So 4 years later before it came out. But 1960, he'd already had it on the boards with you.
Yeah, well, he actually had been trying for a long time to get the rights to this thing.
Julie Andrews and the Mary Poppins with her umbrella. Oh, you're talking.
That's all later. Mm-hmm, no, but all he had was the rights to develop a book, a storyline. And then we had to win over Mrs. Travers, the lady who wrote the books. That's a whole story into itself. But to make a long story short, he liked us and he liked what we were doing. And he put us under contract because of what we had written and what we were coming up with. He thought that we thought story. He said, you think story. And that's important because we knew the story was the whole key to this thing.
Somehow there was more than thinking story, though, going on. You captured a spirit again and again and again, which is so now immediately identifiable as Disney and maybe something more than that, a particular period in American history, world history, a kind of romance. He didn't just put it to work in Mary Poppins. He put it to work in The Jungle Book and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Winnie the Pooh, The Aristocats, and right on down the line. At the 1964 New York World's Fair, he put Richard Sherman, my guest, and his brother Robert's work to work in It's a Small World, which everybody knows at this point. Richard Sherman is with us. We're going to hear a lot of music from this great Disney era. He and his brother, Robert, essentially wrote it, created it. You can join us this hour. Was this the soundtrack of your childhood? Mary Poppins, Jungle Book, all the rest. Do you feel like you know Richard Sherman's mind somehow just from that huge lineup of music? Or is it Walt Disney's mind? We'll ask. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook with the great Richard Sherman. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
End of every day, there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, and tomorrow's just a dream away.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the super composer and songwriter of some of the Disney realm's most memorable music. Mary Poppins, The Jungle Book, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Winnie the Pooh, and a whole lot more. Richard Sherman. He and his brother Robert wrote song after song after song in the 1960s of some of Disney's most famous movie musicals. And not just that. Behind us right here, Richard Sherman, along with his brother Robert, and Walt Disney himself singing this song, This is a Greatly Beautiful Tomorrow, which would be used at the 1964 World's Fair and at Disneyland.
Pretty good. In fact, that's just the right spirit. Our songwriters, Dick and Bob Sherman of the Walt Disney Studio. Thanks, boys. Say goodbye to the folks.
Bye-bye.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
Off they go.
As I said, that's the spirit.
Richard Sherman with me in the studio, listening back there over all those years to the voice of Walt Disney himself.
That's right.
Dick
that's
and Bob.
The boss. That's the boy. You know, it's amazing that particular little jewel was Walt wanted to have some more money so he could finish the pavilion he was going to do at the World's Fair.
Yeah.
And GE had to cough up with another, I think, $75,000,
$100,000,
a fortune. But he said, well, we had just finished this song. He said, well, bring it in. We're going to record it. And so we shot this in one take on a stage, a little sound stage with a piano.
Wow.
And Walt sang it with us. We didn't even know that he was going to do that.
Yeah, and there he was.
He sang it with us. And here I am 50 years later listening to it. It's great. Yeah, it's very exciting.
It's an amazing body of work, just amazing. Listeners, Richard Sherman is with us. You can join us. Was this the soundtrack of your childhood? Did Richard Sherman and his brother Robert introduce you as a kid to the whole idea of characters breaking into song? Did he leave a soundtrack in your head? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I want to ask you in a second, because when you play It's a Small World and even Beautiful Tomorrow, you know, and then all these others, which some of which are so touching, but people have this question about joy in music and schmaltz in music. And I want to ask you about it because this wasn't the only kind of thing you were doing. Here's another song, the Sherman Brothers song, You're 16. It was a hit twice, the first time 1960, sung by Johnny Burnett, the second time in 1974, sung by the Beatles' Ringo Starr. They weren't just Walt Disney's boys. Here's Johnny Burnett's version of their song, You're 16.
Peaches and cream, lips like strawberry wine. You're 16, you're beautiful and you're mine. You're all ribbons and curls, oh what a girl. Eyes that twinkle and shine. You're 16, you're beautiful and you're mine.
You're 16 by Richard and Robert Sherman. Who knew?
Who knew?
That the same guys who did Mary Poppins and all the rest were doing that. Were you tempted to just go down that line? It sounds like you could have done very well in that world.
You hang loose. I tell you something. We wrote what was called for. And in those days, rock and roll was the biggest thing. The kids were buying that stuff. And we learned by listening to the great stuff that was being written and just tried to emulate it and just did it. Yeah, it was a period in our time when people thought of us as rock and roll songwriters. That's because we had one hit after another in those, in that style. But our dream was to write book musicals and to get characters going and that type of thing. Really, we dreamed of doing what we finally wound up doing, and that is writing book musicals.
You made very beautiful music. You grew up in New York. You knew the word schmaltz. Was that, did that float around, or is that 21st century cynicism looking back? I mean, it's love at the same time, but you know how people, you sing It's a Small World today, and people, oh yeah, but then they roll their eyes too, like, oh my gosh.
Well, see, I said earlier, my dad was a songwriter, and he said the secret to writing a great song, really, it has to keep it simple, singable, and sincere. Three S's. He said, remember that? And always original. So if you can be simple, singable, sincere, and original, you've got yourself a chance. And so Bob and I kept using that as our formula. No matter what we did, no matter how we wrote, we always write it so that it was accessible to people and yet try to be as original as possible. We worked very hard to come up with a new way of saying something.
Yeah. We're going to hear a bunch of that. Of course, Jungle Book is out new. I want to talk about that. I saw it the other night. It was just terrific. All kinds of new sort of Indian jungle, Hindustani sort of feeling
great
to
production.
It. Lots of life, like a nightclub in the jungle. We have lots of callers for you, Richard Sherman. Carrie in Pocatello, Idaho. You're on the air with Richard Sherman.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Carrie.
Thank you for that music that you let me grow up with. But my question is, what was your inspiration for creating such a plethora of music?
I think it's a labor of love. Bob and I really, truly loved what we were doing, and we had a great opportunity to express ourselves and one great assignment after another. And it was just, we were like in a candy store. We just were having this great time, you know, doing these various assignments. And I just feel very blessed that that's where I was, but it's very nice of you to think that I worked at it. I worked hard at writing good things if I could, but the blessing was the fact that we had the talent for it.
Talk about what it was like to work with Walt Disney. How much of the inspiration came from the boss? How much was your own? How did those two get together? What was that relationship?
A great relationship. All of the creative people that worked for Walt had one thing going for them, and that is that he left them alone to create the way they wanted to, but he inspired us. He pushed in a direction. He'd steer you in a way and say, I need something this way, and he'd sort of give you a feeling of what he wanted. He was a great actor. He could sort of perform with his face what you wanted to do. And when he liked something, he never said, oh, wonderful, great, marvelous. He never gave us that. It was always, yeah, that'll work. And that very sotto voce, that'll work, just soft like that. But that was him. But he was great. He was an inspiration to work for.
I read in the program for the new stage version of The Jungle Book that he would actually come in and sort of physically mime out the character of characters that were in the book. That he, in front of maybe you and Robert and others, it would be Walt Disney himself being Baloo the Bear, or you name it.
Well, that's right. Walt had this marvelous ability to become the characters that he wanted to express. And I remember vividly the fact that our first meeting on Jungle Book, he said, have you guys read Jungle Book? There were a bunch of us in the room, and nobody had read it. So he said, that's great, because I want to tell you the way I hear this story, because it's a very dark, murky story, a series of adventures for little Mowgli, the boy that was raised as a wolf. So therefore, he told his way, and he became Baloo the Bear and Ka the Snake and all the rest of the characters.
Walt Disney himself kind of wiggling around or doing the big bear
jiggle. Scratching his back and all. Yes, that was Walt. Inhibitions with Walt. He just would do it.
The great song, I Want to Be Like You, I Want to Be Like You from that. There's a story about, it was sung for the movie by jazz man Louis Prima, who played the King Louis, the great orangutan, sort of fantastic role. There's a story about you and your brother Robert traveling to Vegas before the movie was made to pitch the song to Prima.
Oh, gosh, I'll never forget that. Bob and I, we had played it for Walt, and he said, yep, that'll work. And he said, I think, and then we said, who do you have in mind? And we said, well, Louis Prima, he has this band called Sam Butera and the Witnesses. They're the wildest group in all of Las Vegas, and they're great. He says, well, why don't you go there and play it for him? So we went to Las Vegas and waited our turn because he's all night long the band would be performing, and they did segments of 45 minutes, and then they'd be off for a while. And we were waiting till 4 in the morning to get finally with them. And we got into this little room, and while they looked like wild men on the stage when they were performing, they were the parochial look characters. They all look like professors, you know.
I mean, off stage.
Yeah, off stage. Yeah. They were just sitting there with these strange faces. And I'm supposed to be playing for them.
Yeah.
So I was playing this song for them. And you want to hear what it sounded like when I sang it for them?
Yes, we do. You've got the keyboard. You've got the pipes.
Yeah, I got the keyboard, and here it goes. Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. No, I want to be a man cub and stroll right into town and be just like the other men. I'm tired of monkeying round. Say, ooh, 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 I want to be like you, ooh, ooh. I want to walk like you, talk like you, too. You'll see it's true, ooh, ooh, shoo-ba-doo-doo. An ape like me, scoop-a-doo-ba-dee-dee, can learn to be human, too, ooh, ooh. So I sang the song all the way through like that.
Yeah.
And these guys just looking without a cracking a smile.
You're kidding.
And finally, Louis looked at me and said, are you trying to make a monkey out of me? I said, no, you're the ape. The other guys are the monkeys. And they screamed. They started laughing. And it was funny. They deliberately kept their face quiet. They said, don't show them anything until we finish.
Oh, they messed with you.
They loved it, and they said, we want to do it very much. Absolutely.
You know, I saw this the other night at the Huntington Theater in Boston with Andre DeShields.
Oh, he's sensational.
Unbelievable. Just delirious energy on that stage.
He stops
in that
show. They rise up at the end of that number.
Oh, the audience was way off on its feet
On their feet screaming. It's great. It's a showstopper.
Let's bring our callers in. Richard Sherman is with us. He wrote some of the greatest classic music of the great classic era of Disney movie musicals. Elise is calling from Boston. Elise, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you so much for doing this segment, because I grew up with The Jungle Book especially. I mean, it's a couple of years older than me, but at the age of 25, it's still my favorite movie. Like, my boyfriend still makes fun of me for being so obsessed with it.
Thank you, Elise.
My question is, all the songs that you've wrote for Disney, do you have a favorite, and which one would you say?
Oh, yeah, well, I do really have a favorite. It was Walt's favorite. He made no bones about it. He loved a song we had written in Mary Poppins called Feed the Birds, Tuppence a Bag.
Yeah.
He loved that song for a lot of reasons. I think he knew that was the keynote to the meaning of the picture Mary Poppins. It was the fact that it doesn't take very much to give love, to give a kind deed, to give a kind thought, to pay attention to someone. It's symbolic. It's a feed the birds, meaning give that love. Tuppence a bag is two pennies. It's nothing. It doesn't cost anything to be kind and loving. And he loved the fact that we said it the way we said it.
We're going to get you to play that before we're finished here.
Elise, good.
Elise, have you seen the stage version of The Jungle Book, Elise?
Oh, no, I haven't. I really wish that I had.
Listen,
you got to see it.
If you like that, you got to see it. It's got all kinds of sort of ramped up It's got this real South Asian feel on top of the wonderful music. You've got to check it out. Elise, thanks for your call. Richard, what about that? This stage version? You got involved in that a little bit, and it's got this new flavor to it. How would you describe
it? It's incredible. It's a fusion of two schools of music. We have American jazz and swing on one hand, and we have Indian music, pure Indian music with Indian instruments. The sitars and the wonderful instruments that I can't pronounce all the names of, but they're so great. And we have two bands that fuse together, and it's a very new sound. It's just absolutely indescribable and gorgeous. It's
fusion jazz. Britt in Littleton, Massachusetts. Britt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Mr. Sherwitz, I just wanted to say thank you so much for this music. The Jungle Book in particular, as a child growing up in rural Virginia, was my introduction to jazz music, and it gave me a lifelong love of jazz. And I don't think I would have had that experience until college, if not for that movie.
Oh, that's so great. It's nice to hear that. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Britt. I mean, you remind us rock and roll was king in these years, but you were bringing plenty of jazz into the Disney oeuvre. I mean, you can still feel it. I mean, there's a kind of Louis Armstrong thread running through Jungle Book and a lot of other Disney. What about your relationship with jazz, you and Robert?
Well, I just always loved it. I mean, I grew up on Louis Armstrong when I was a kid. I collected all his Columbia records. They were on 78 records, you know. Now they have them on LPs, the Hot 5 and the Hot 7, these great groups that he led, and I just there's something very marvelous about it. It's joyful music, and it's exciting music, and it's inventive music, and I've always loved that, and I've always put a little bit of that jazz feel into our music.
Let's hear a little bit from this jazzed up version of The Jungle Book. This is currently running at Boston's Huntington Theater, uses the songs, your songs, from the 67th film, but adds Indian instrumentation, musical styles, as you say. Here's the show's version of Hathi's March, the March of the Elephants.
One, two, three, four, kick it up! Two, three, four, and the ranks a single file over every jungle mile. Oh, we stamp and crush through the underbrush.
And in comes that Indian sound. We've almost got a little Bollywood mixing up with Rudyard Kipling, mixing it up with you and Walt Disney.
Beautiful. And I think when you heard those first sounding trumpets, that thing, that's called a snake trumpet. And it's a very special Indian instrument.
Almost like an elephant's literal trumpet
yes.
in the wild.
And that's traditional. In India, you hear drums pounding and these things going, and the elephants are coming. So we used it in the show. Doug Peck, our musical director, came up with that. He's
just
so
fantastic. I've got to get one of those. Kim in Colorado Springs, Colorado. You're on the air with Richard Sherman.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk with Mr. Sherman. Winnie the Pooh was mine growing up. I thank you for writing it. Just that's what I believed. And
thank you.
I have a high schooler and a college student. They're both boys. And let me tell you, Jungle Book is on the top of the pile for all of our marathon movies when we get together in the summer or at Christmas. And they just love it. And I guess the only question I would have for you is, what was your biggest surprise in the music and movies that you did?
The biggest surprise I ever had? Let me see. Let me think.
Maybe something that really hit that you didn't think would, or that didn't that you thought might, or...
You know, it's very hard to... Surprises are hard. We put so much into things when we work on them, and you sort of lose your dreams of what you're going to do with it all. You want to get through it by the time you're finished. I think the huge surprise to me really is that over the years, these songs and these pictures have lived, and they're still active today. And I think one of the most joyous surprises, of course, is the fact that shows like Mary Poppins and Chitty Bang Bang and now Jungle Book are all alive and well and living here 50 years or so later from when we wrote them. I think that is the greatest surprise of all.
That is pretty incredible. They've got, as they say, legs.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They've got legs. Kim, you like Winnie the Pooh? Here we go. Out with it. The Sherman Brothers wrote it for the 1966 film Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree, anthologized into the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh. Richard Sherman and his brother Robert wrote an amazing body of work for Walt Disney. Mary Poppins, The Jungle Book, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Aristocats, Winnie the Pooh, on and on and on. He's with us in the studio, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. This is On Point.
Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, chubby little cubby all stuffed with fluff. He's Winnie the Pooh,
Winnie the Pooh,
willy nilly silly old bear.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the super composer and songwriter of some of the Disney realm's most memorable music. Mary Poppins, The Jungle Book, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang right here, Winnie the Pooh, so much more. Richard Sherman is with us. He and his brother Robert wrote, it seemed at the time, the world for Walt Disney, show after spectacular show, movie, musical, right out of their pens off their keyboards. He's with me in the studio today. What's your question for Richard Sherman about how they came up with all those songs, their inspiration about working with Walt Disney? What's the spirit that you hear of the musical world they created? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. 1968, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang behind us right there. Walt Disney let the Sherman Brothers out of their contract for several months to write the songs for that film. Why out of contract?
Well, Walt felt that this would be a good thing for our career, and he didn't want to do a joint production with Cubby Broccoli, the gentleman who produced all the James Bond films. Because okay. Chitty Bang Bang was written by Ian Fleming.
Oh, so, I never focused on that.
It was a Fleming story. So he said, this might be good for your career if you meet Cubby and you like him. Mm-hmm. So we met him, and he was a wonderful man. I loved mm-hmm. him. And so Bob and I said, gee, it'd be great to. So he gave us an out in our contract, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. was very, very wonderful. Very
yeah.
few producers would do that because we were his hot writers. And
did you feel away from his aura, his world, that your music morphed, changed, leaned toward a different spirit? Or did he go with you?
No, we just we wrote what we felt was right for that picture. Cubby was a wonderful producer, and he gave us all our heading, you know, yeah. let us do what we wanted to do and how we felt about it. And he was very receptive. And it was a very lovely experience. And it's interesting how so many people assume that Chitty Bang Bang was a Walt Disney film. It really
yeah,
wasn't.
Yeah.
But it did have the spirit. It is a family film, a wholesome film, a very lovely, fun picture. And again, I got to thank Walt Disney for that. So,
where did you turn for inspiration? So many listeners are asking. I mean, you know, there's this range of things. There's some sort of German beer hall oompa sound in some of these things. There's definitely New Orleans and Dixieland. There's French kind of chanteuse feeling sometimes. I mean, how was it just from the music you'd heard growing up? Did you actively ransack, you know, the cupboards of 20th century music and older? Where'd you go for it?
Well, that's a great question. You've answered my question in certain ways, but not really. I've always loved music. I mean, from the time I was a little boy, mm-hmm. I used to listen to records. I would listen to everything. And in those days, there were two sides of a record. And I would listen to both sides of every record. Even the hit side was on one side and the secondary number was on the other. I would listen to everything. And I learned to love the sound of a good song. It just got to me. It was something very special. And I loved English music hall. That's why we wanted to write Mary Poppins in that mm-hmm. style. Mm-hmm. And I loved French music. So we wrote for Chevalier, and we got lucky with him. I mean, it was just a matter of loving the thing I did and following my bliss.
Well, yes, beautiful. I can't applaud more. what was your division of labor? Was it like the Gershwin brothers, one on the keyboard, one scribbling the lyrics, or were you back and forth?
It was kind of a mutual thing. Bob was not a musician, but he would be very eloquent in how he felt about how I was handling the music. Mm-hmm. We'd think of ideas together. Mm-hmm. We'd wrote lyrics together. I'd mm-hmm. Write a line, he'd write a line. And then we'd collaborate on a line. And we'd take a line out and put another line in. And it was like we really kind of thought together. We thought as a unit. And somebody asked me recently, what's it like when you're writing on your own now? Because I'm writing lyrics and everything on myself. I said, well, in a way, Bob's still sitting in the room with me. He's working with me. He's thinking alongside me. And he's saying, that line sucks. I mean, when I write a line, because I could just hear it. I could just hear it when he's talking to me. So it's after 50 years of writing together.
I'm sure you do. You said Mary Poppins was an English music hall style, and I can hear Mary Poppins running through my head, but I'm not sure that apart from that, I would know how to describe English music hall style. What does that mean to you?
It's a kind of a wonderful vanilla-sounding vaudeville. It's with tricky little words like... I'm trying to think of
supercalifragilistic.
That feel, actually, exactly. It's kind of a razzmatazzy kind of a sound, but a very innocent sound. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, or you chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang. We love you.
It
has a lilting kind of a quality to it. Yeah, that's what it was. I mean, I did feel that. I feel that style.
But it could also be sentimental, almost haunting. You mentioned Feed the Birds.
Yes, that's
I mean, that can bring you to tears, the simple beauty of that.
Well, again, it's a marriage of thought, the idea behind it, and the melody, of course, which has kind of a folksy quality to it. And this Chim Chim Cheree, for example, has a haunting folksy quality.
Yes.
Again, it's just... But they all feel British. They all feel English.
Remind us. Well, let's just hear it. Play Feed the Birds for us.
Oh, sure.
Can you sing it?
Sure. Walt's favorite song. Early each day to the steps of St. Paul's, the little old bird woman comes in her own special way to the people she calls. Come buy my bags full of crumbs. Come feed the little birds, show them you care, and you'll be glad if you do. Their young ones are hungry, their nests are so bare, all it takes is tuppence from you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag. Tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. Feed the birds, that's what she cries, while overhead her birds fill the skies. All around the cathedral the saints and apostles look down as she sells her wares. Although you can't see it, you know they are smiling each time someone shows that he cares. Though her words are simple and few, listen, listen, she's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag. Tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag.
Richard Sherman singing it. He wrote it with his brother for Walt Disney, Walt Disney's favorite. I should say thank you to Mr. Music in Boston for this lovely piano and keyboard that you're playing.
Oh, it's lovely.
I remember being 9 years old and getting so moony and swoony listening and singing that song with my brother and sister.
Oh.
I mean, why? What is it that just, what did make Walt swoon for?
How can you explain things? Certain things are inspired and inspiration comes from someplace very special. I don't want to take credit for things. You know, sometimes I say, well, Bob and I, you know, we sat in the room and we discussed this thing and then I started playing and he says, yeah, leave that, that's good. I mean, we just were working together and it just... felt right. I said, I think we said it all. I said, I remember thinking, we haven't said enough words. He says, I think we've said it without words. Mm-hmm. And that was what it was all about.
And Walt Disney said it was his favorite song because so much pleasure for a two-penny bag of seed.
And also for what it meant. It meant to give people a little love, give people a little understanding. His whole mission in life was making people happy. And that's one of the things that he did. And I think in the case of Mary Poppins, it was Mr. Banks who needed to learn how to feed the birds. And he finally takes his family out and flies a kite with them at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Banks, whose bank was failing in the movie, run on his bank
and all the rest,
he had to become childlike.
But then he all of a sudden realized, you know something, I've been failing as a father. I haven't been paying attention to my family. And Mary Poppins taught him that, you see.
Julie Andrews, pay attention to the essentials here with your family,
exactly,
Mr. Banks.
Exactly, exactly.
John in Thetford, Vermont. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks, Tom. Mr. Sherman, I will say that when I was a kid, I loved your songs, and I love them to this day, and now I have some 6 and 7-year-olds.
Oh, bless you.
They're singing the songs as well.
Thank you so much.
My question, though, is that in Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews, of course, does such a fantastic job, and there's a great scene where she actually sings a little duet with herself, looking in the mirror. It's very clever, and I wondered if, at the time, you knew you were actually writing for Julie Andrews, and if you did you do anything special or different to draw off the strength of her voice?
Wonderful question. Thanks,
yeah,
John.
That's a wonderful question. Bob and I were writing for a character named Mary Poppins. The dream of having a Julie Andrews playing this part was absolutely nothing in our minds at all. We just were writing the songs for we never dreamt of Dick Van Dyke as Bert. We never dreamt of anybody. We just were writing characters. And when we had Mary Poppins in music, then the big hunt was to find the right person. And it just was beautiful luck that she was available. She was about to make her debut as a motion picture actress, and this was the picture she did it in.
She was so young.
She was about 27.
Okay.
She had been a major theatrical star for years. I mean, she did My Fair Lady.
That's what I'm thinking.
She did Camelot.
When she went earlier
to
stage.
She started out in singing when she was a child. She is a great lady, a great, great human being, and she was a blessing to us. She was a great Mary Poppins.
Everybody thinks of all that again and again. It's funny. We have so many comments here on Facebook thinking about how these songs just live on and live on. Scott asks you, what's it like to be immortal? And these songs don't go away.
Now, you said immortal.
Yes, I didn't say anything else.
You didn't say immoral. No, let me say truly. First of all, that's very sweet. I think it's very humbling. I just feel very, very fortunate to have been in the right place at the right time. My brother Bob and I, thank you so much for saying something like that. I don't want to take any bows on that. I don't even acknowledge I'm immortal. I'm still around, first of all.
Yeah, first of all. But the songs, you know they're going to go on, and that must be a very satisfying feeling.
Well, it is very gratifying. It's very thrilling to know this wonderful production of Jungle Book, which is alive and thriving, and it's just about to open, I think, tomorrow.
It's open in Boston now?
In previews, but the official opening is tomorrow.
I thought it was just terrific. I mean, I was surprised, actually, by just how kind of funky and contemporary it is.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, oh, boy, I'm going back to the childhood days. It was that, but it was something quite new and wonderful.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's special. Mary Zimmerman, who is a brilliant, brilliant writer-director. She directed and conceived this whole thing, and Doug Peck is the hero musically. They did a great, great job.
And you never said, stop, you're making Bollywood out of me.
I said, more. No, do more. I had a chance to write a couple of new things introduced in it. And there's about 5 numbers that nobody's ever heard before that are in the show, along with the 5 that they do know. And
the scenery, the motion, it's kind of delirious, ravishing. Somebody said it's really great. Harry in Burlington, Vermont. You're on the air, Harry.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling, taking me. First of all, what an honor to speak with Mr. Sherpin. Great stuff. My question is this. I corresponded with Bill Pete many years ago, who was an animator for Disney.
Oh, yes, I know.
Many, many years. And he, in his autobiography, he mentions that Walt Disney was particularly could be very angry and depressed. In fact, one of the quotes that he said in Pete's autobiography He was yelling at the animators in one of their meetings, and he ran out and said, before he ran out of the room, he said to all of the animators, if you want to see some real entertainment, then see Mary Poppins. And he stormed out, and Bill Pete apparently quit after that. He just had had it with Walt Disney. Did you have any experience with Disney being depressed or angry or anything like that?
I know all about that particular incident.
I bet you do.
But because here's what happened. Bill Pete and a wonderful songwriter named Terry Gilkison were assigned to develop Jungle Book. And they developed Jungle Book the way Kipling wrote Jungle Book. And that was a very murky, dark, serious series of incidents with the animals. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They didn't have personalities with joyous experiences. Mm-hmm. They were very murky. And Walt had said he was very busy working on the World Fair project and things. He'd given Bill Pete, the free range to go ahead and develop it. So they spent a long time developing this project, which was totally what he didn't want. So he blew his top. Of course he did.
He didn't want it because it was too dark. And that
exactly.
wasn't Walt Disney's way.
And his way was to tell it with joy and happiness. Mm-hmm. Told the same story, but with that type of thing. That's what happened.
And so go see Mary Poppins if you want to see. Have a sip. It's good. See Mary Poppins if you want to see the way I want to have it.
That's what he meant by that.
But he could be a tough boss. Did you feel the lash?
Never, ever. He was absolutely like a Dutch uncle, lovely uncle to us.
Well, you guys talk about valuable. You were making all the magic here.
We felt the same way about things.
You're 85. You're still composing. Give us just a little lick. We've just got a minute. A little lick of something lately. What kind of thing are you doing?
Oh, well, I don't know. I think I've been writing a lot of instrumental pieces and things like that, and it's just offhand. I'm not prepared to play anything.
Okay. That's okay. That's fine. We're just thrilled that you're still at it.
You got me.
No, that's all right. Do you feel still in the Disney orbit when you compose today, or are you now way on down the road?
I feel I've been in the Disney orbit for the past 55 years. But not only that, I feel that I'm in my own orbit because I just like to write. I've written for so many wonderful producers over the years. We've written many, many pictures. I'm not going to go plugging everything. But they all had that one thing in common, and that were they were kind of up characters. They were up feelings. They were things that made you feel good. I don't like to write heavy. I think everybody and his Uncle Harry can write heavy. I want to write light and happy.
I think there's always a place for it.
Yeah.
And what about when times are dark?
Especially. That's when you need it the most. That's when you need it the most.
You still hear it these days? Do you hear new music that's got that
occasionally
remember the joy
I'm,
feeling
occasionally
to it?
I'm thrilled with stuff that
I don't know what, Bruno Mars or somebody?
Sometimes you hear something that really gets to you. I hear good songs every once in a while.
Yeah.
A lot of songs sound very ordinary to me these days, but once in a while something steps out and just makes me say, hey, wow, that's good. That's good stuff.
Richard Sherman and his late brother Robert really made the sound of the classic Walt Disney era. In Mary Poppins, The Jungle Book, Winnie the Pooh, Aristocats, right on and on and on. It's been a tremendous honor to have you with us today.
Well, it's been a joy to be here. I enjoyed it very much.
Richard Sherman. Jungle Book is back on stage. See it if it comes to where you are. Thanks to Mr. Music in Boston for this beautiful keyboard, for you tipping the ivory. Fantastic. I Want to Be Like You. We'll go out with it. 1967's The Jungle Book. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
Ah.